one thing which is the least spoken about. We hear about leaders as coaches, leaders being empathetic, servant leadership, authentic leadership. But the piece that I think is missing is leaders are in a unique role to translate the strategy and what they're hearing from senior leadership down to an employee and a team level. And what that does is that helps to create a more accessible way for employees to understand, you know, why do I matter? Why does our work matter? You know, why am I here? And again, that really unlocks that meaningful work.
Angela Rickson, you're the founder and CEO of the Centre for Meaningful Work in London and the author of the Amazon best-selling book, Meaning Over Purpose. With over 25 years experience in professional services and technology, you now work with CEOs and executive teams in what you call the closing the purpose to meaning gap, and you embed meaning into leadership, into culture, into performance. Angela, welcome to the HR Future Live podcast. I'm really looking forward to our chat.
Thank you, Alan. I'm delighted to have a conversation with you today about meaningful work.
Good stuff. Now, let's get into that meaningful work. Is it really true that when people experience meaningful work, they more committed, more productive, and far less likely to leave? Is that really so?
Yeah, actually, I did some deep dive learning myself. I did a master's in 2022, 2023, when I left my corporate career. And really, Alan, for me, it was all about thinking, I know that there are some things that I've done through my career that felt sort of different, that was effective. And I wanted to understand what research was out there to validate some of the things which I had seen and experienced and delivered. And through that master's, I found 44 meta-studies around this topic of meaningful work, which showed a direct link between meaningful work and, exactly, you've got it completely right, engagement, commitment, and job satisfaction. And importantly, that then led to increased performance and reduced risk of leaving the organization. So it's very compelling as a robust avenue for organizations to explore around the business case.
Now, forgive the obvious question, Angela. What makes work meaningful?
Fantastic question. Thank you, Alan. I think what happens is sometimes people think of purpose and meaning as the same thing, whereas actually it's a bit different. So let's unpack that. So organization purpose is the organization's reason for existing. So think about Simon Sinek, all of the work that he did around why, two computer companies, what makes them different. It's the articulation of the why, the unique why for that organization. And many organizations have invested in what I call like those purpose statements, where they've got very clear sentiments. For example, our purpose is to build a better working world. That would be an example. Where the gap is if you then look at what meaning is in comparison, that's about the personal meaning that employees find from work. And that would be, you know, why do I matter around here? Why me, other than somebody else? And actually, what makes work meaningful for me? What are those ingredients? And I found through my research, the research that I did with interviewing 100 people, that there are five elements, which I call the five pillars of meaningful work. But at the heart of it, if you think about the organization purpose is why we exist, meaning is how do I feel on a Tuesday morning when I'm at work? So as well as the elements that people think about in terms of making a difference, it's also the lived experience of meaning at work on a day-to-day basis.
Now, people, when we talk about people needing or having purpose, you know, reason for getting up in the morning and so on and so forth, but people have different purposes, so to speak. They don't all have the same. How does one kind of coordinate all of that and get it to kind of move into the organization's overriding purpose?
Well, that is such a great question, because one of the challenges that HR leaders may have around meaningful work is, well, isn't it really subjective? Everybody has a different experience. And what I found through my research is, actually, I started my research to understand why female leaders stay or opt out of a corporate career. So originally, the phase one of the research was just looking at gender equity and women's intent to leave, with a view that I could then recommend to organizations what would help women stay. Now, I extended the research to talk to allies of women for gender equity, but through that conversation, I was asking them about was work meaningful for them? And no surprise, it actually was too, or surprise, surprise, depending upon how you want to look at it. And so I thought, oh, hang on a minute. So women really attuned to meaningful work, men attuned to meaningful work. And then I thought, well, what's happening with younger generations? And then I extended the research again to speak to millennial and Gen Z. And actually, they were also talking about meaning. And whilst there are some differences, what I found through the research is there are these five common elements, which are autonomy, mastery or growth, personal purpose, connection, and impact. So there are patterns that I found through the research, which actually, at a universal level, you can apply those to all employees in the organization.
Angela, for companies that are still stuck in the traditional approach to employee appreciation, what have you got to say to them that will help them kind of move from the one and maybe talk about those traditional approaches, what they are, so that people can be alerted to the fact that that's what they're involved with, and then how they can migrate to the more progressive approaches.
Yes, so I want to answer that in two ways. I think the first way is to talk about the deal at work, so the employee value proposition. And that employee value proposition, in my opinion, is based on a model of work that is 150 years old, which is one size fits all, standardized, controlled. For a job for life, you get security, but we require followership with very rigid boundaries. I think that's broken down now for lots of reasons. I think it's because of AI is really questioning now what work people will be doing in the future. I think there's different generations coming into the workplace that have different expectations and also realize that organizations can't give them a job for life. The level of burnout that organizations and individuals are experiencing, I think in 2019, burnout became an occupational phenomenon now. So it's actually been diagnosed as an issue. And then, of course, hybrid work. So hybrid work is changing things where even though organizations are sort of striving to get people back to the office, I believe that the genie's out of the bottle now. And there are some advantages to hybrid work as well as some things which need to be managed. So I think there's a whole piece around the old deal, the employee value proposition is no longer fit for purpose because of these changes. And therefore, we need a new deal. And that's where I think meaningful work comes in. And then the second piece is around appreciation itself. So it was interesting actually that on the 6th of March was Employee Appreciation Day. And my reflections of that is, isn't it amazing when we can appreciate and celebrate each other? You know, at one level, that's amazing. However, when this day was brought in as an idea to have a focal point in the mid 1990s, the person who originated the idea, a gentleman called Dr. Bob Nelson, when he was interviewed in 2015, he said it was never just meant to be one day in a year. We're actually meant to appreciate throughout the year, every day. And what happens is there's a level of cynicism that comes in because if suddenly leaders are thanking everybody on a particular day of the year and celebrating them, then actually, and then they're not doing it on a more consistent basis, and the rewards and the incentives aren't aligned to that, that starts to really break down what's happening from an appreciation point of view. And then I think my second point around appreciation is, from an employee point of view, it's very much a short-term feeling. Oh, you patted me on the back. Thank you. That felt nice, but it isn't really sustainable. And as part of it not being sustainable, appreciation itself doesn't fix some of the structural issues. So what I call this say-do gap between organizations talking about purpose and values and people, but actually the lived experience being working very demanding hours, maybe working in an environment where they don't feel psychologically safe. So it's because of that. It's not that appreciation isn't a good thing, it's a great thing. My point is that meaningful work is something which is more sustainable, of which, you know, appreciation is one element of it.
How can one breathe authenticity into this? Because people are very quick to spot when something is not authentic, and it's important to do that. How can one do that?
So actually, part of this is at the leadership level. So as well as the five pillars, I've also looked at what are the five leadership behaviors which reinforce meaningful work. And the first one is to model it yourself, which is about you modeling authentically your values, what's meaningful for you. It's not just talking the talk, it's walking the walk of what meaningful work is. So that, as an example, is where that authenticity piece really shines through. And to your point, Alan, people work it out very quickly if there's, that somebody's not authentic, and it's much better for leaders to be vulnerable. So I'm working with an organization that's going through a lot of change, and what the leaders were saying to me is, Angela, we're really worried about talking about how we feel about the change. It's like we have to be almost a leader robot who says, this is the change, just go and do it, coping with employee resistance, rather than saying, there's a lot of change going on, guys. I really feel it too. I really do. And, I've got mixed feelings about this change, but, the organization thinks that this is the right thing to do. So I'm getting behind this, and I'd love you to get behind it too. Now, there's such a difference in somebody being authentic about what's really going on for them.
You talk about the purpose to meaning gap. Do many organizations have such a gap?
I think lots of organizations have that gap, and the gap shows itself up through engagement stats. So we know that Gallup, as an example, says that 21% of employees are engaged. So the flip side of that is 4 out of 5 people are disengaged or actively disengaged. And that's where the gap occurs, because there is this is what we stand for as an organization, this is what our brand is. And one example actually is in some of the talks and the workshops that I do, I ask people, have you ever joined an organization where through the recruitment process, the brand is amazing, the purpose statement is amazing, you've had a good recruitment experience. 2 months into the job, you're like, oh, hang on a minute, this wasn't exactly what I thought it would be. There's a difference between what I thought this organization stood for and the lived experience. And we know that lots of organizations struggle with turnover in the first year of employment, and a lot of that is around this purpose to meaning gap.
Angela, I want you to take us act as a tour guide now. Take us on a guided tour of what you're seeing in the marketplace, so to speak, in the workplace rather, in terms of engagement, retention, and so on. Just give us a sense of the feel, what's happening in the market.
Yeah, so I would say that this is a time where there has never been so much disruption. And I think that is very much showing up in engagement in organizations. So it's the amount of change, there's a lot of fear, even the number of change programs going on within organizations. Before it would be, here's a waterfall approach to change, we're starting there, we're going to finish in 10 years' time, here are the steps. That's not how change is working now. It's people, process, technology change. There's a lot of economic uncertainty. There's a lot of geopolitical challenges, which are creating a level of uncertainty and unrest in individuals anyway. And then they're coming into the organization and they are finding that there's a lot of demands being put on them. They're being asked to adapt. There are challenges around maybe what legacy leadership thinks is important versus what employees think are important now. So I'm beginning to really see some of that friction. And that's showing up in a term called quiet quitting, which I don't know if you've heard about. So it's not just that people will leave and vote with their feet and go, they're actually staying within organizations, but they're giving minimal effort. And as a HR leader, I'll be like, gosh, I really need to tackle that challenge and really find a way of going from people being sort of disengaged to how can we get them to being engaged or highly engaged? What does that journey look like? So I do think there's a crisis at the moment. And I do hope that leaders think about how could we look at this in a different way? Because I think what we're trying to do at the moment is optimize what we're already doing. And frankly, I don't think it's working.
To your point of the quiet quitting, what advice have you got for leaders, for HR professionals to spot the problems. Because it's as you say, it's quiet and it's not going to become very visible and audible. But what are the telltale giveaway signs?
Yeah, it would be things like one of them, which often comes up, is there's some additional work to be done over and above a day job, and you're looking for volunteers. So when you get the asking for volunteers and there's tumbleweed and there's that silence, and you think, oh, nobody is offering to do something, which even if you think, actually, I know there's at least two people in the room who's really interested in this topic. So that, as an example, would be one signal. It's things like not being as responsive sometimes. And I want to be quite careful about saying that because I do believe it's about people focusing on outcomes and not being present. But there's something about, how people respond, the energy, the time frame that they respond to. So if they're sort of checked out at one level psychologically, you're just going to miss the energy that normally comes with a very vibrant, engaged workforce.
Any advice on how HR leaders can embed meaning into the DNA of the organization?
Definitely. So there's a couple of things. So within my book, there is a diagnostic called the Meaning Gap Diagnostic. It's 10 questions, so it's short and straightforward. And you could do that as a HR leader. You could do that with your leadership team. You could look at a part of the business to apply that to. And that really helps just diagnose what might be happening. And then the other area is to really think about these five pillars of autonomy, mastery, purpose, connection and impact, and think, well, where does this fit within job design? Because what's happened with job design is still focused around a lot around scope, of course, but control and efficiency, rather than thinking about, well, what are some of the motivational drivers we need to bring into job design, which are around these five pillars of meaningful work. And then also thinking about the employee life cycle, because we can spend so much time on recruitment to get great people into the organization. But what about the different stages of the life cycle? And again, you can have a meaningful work lens to look at that. And my original work in this area came out of me leading change programs. And I remember at the time I did lots of research about what does a good change program structure look like? What are the best thinkers out there? What do they say? And I looked at all of that. And the situation that I was in actually was to lead a program where the employees didn't think there was an issue. So I kind of needed to work quite hard. And it was really through that which then took me on this journey, which was the early stages of what has now become the five pillars of meaningful work. So you can also say, well, when we're going through changes, how can we bring in some of these elements through the change program that help people connect to meaning as they're going through that change program, and how they can, through that change process, which is usually quite stressful and there's a lot of fear and uncertainty in that, how can meaningful work act as a bit of a mediator to that stress?
I've got a couple of rapid-fire questions for you.
Okay.
What would you say is the biggest myth about employee engagement?
I think we are measuring the wrong thing. I think we think that employee engagement as the measure is the answer to everything. My perspective is we need to understand the why beneath employee engagement, which is where meaningful work comes in.
And a leadership habit that you wish would disappear.
Control, the need to control.
Are you seeing a lot of that still? Control?
Yes. And actually, what I'm seeing is leaders are under pressure themselves, going through a lot of change. Their response is to control more rigidly rather than to think about, we've got a challenge. How can I empower the team and bring the team in to help solve the challenge?
Why? Why are they still having this need to control?
Back to, I think, authenticity and vulnerability. I think leaders can have the traditional view of the hero leader, where they need to know all the answers all the time, lead the team. But if we think about what's happening, and I say this a lot to leaders, is with things like AI coming in, you will never know all the answers. There's just reaches a tipping point where you just don't know. So how can you build the capability in your team so that people can problem solve together, or those individuals can problem solve, rather than all of the weight and the burden being on you to know the answers and control everything?
You talked about leadership, the habit of control needing to disappear. What best leadership advice have you ever received?
Best leadership advice I've ever received. I think it's about our role as leaders to really think about, rather than think about the hard side of leadership, which is we need to deliver the targets, we've got structures, we've got roles, we've got accountability, we've got all of that. That is important. But it's really that other side, which is how can you really think about leadership as a route to unlocking human potential? What does that look like? And focus more on that side. Because at the moment, I think the scales aren't balanced. So the best advice I had was to lean into that because I think I was instinctively interested, but almost felt I couldn't. I'm a leader, I can't do that. These are the things that I need to do. So I think we need to embrace that more, empowering people and really unlocking their potential more. And that was the best advice I ever had.
And the most underrated leadership skill?
I actually think it is translating what the organization's purpose is at a team and an individual level. It's the one thing which is the least spoken about. We hear about leaders as coaches, leaders being empathetic, servant leadership, authentic leadership. But the piece that I think is missing is leaders are in a unique role to translate the strategy and what they're hearing from senior leadership down to an employee and a team level. And what that does is that helps to create a more accessible way for employees to understand, you know, why do I matter? Why does our work matter? You know, why am I here? And again, that really unlocks that meaningful work area.
Last one, the biggest myth about employee engagement.
I think it's that employee engagement is, you know, it for me, it's like, well, what's in engagement? What do we mean by engagement? I think sometimes we've got so used to engagement being the metric that leaders think about. To me, what sits beneath engagement is actually energy. What we really want is to unlock energy in people, which is an input, but is also an output. And if we could think about, rather than engagement, you know, what does engagement mean? Do I have the tools to do the job? Do I have a good relationship with my manager? I think a better conversation is how can we unlock energy within our workforce? And that energy is what delivers that productivity, innovation, desire to do excellent customer service. That I think it's shifting it, because otherwise I think we all think we're talking about the same thing. I'm not sure that we are.
Angela, as we wrap up, I do the same thing for everybody. I've learned that experts have things on their hearts that they feel they want to say, and they often don't get a chance to say that. What is it you need to say to people that you haven't had a chance possibly to say?
I believe that work can be a force for good in people's lives. I think we spend a huge amount of time at work, more time at work than we do in our personal lives with our families and our loved ones. And when it's designed well, it's so amazing. Imagine going home at the end of the day and saying, I had the most fantastic day at work. I feel really valued. I did some great work. I'm working with some great people. You know, contrast that to somebody where they go home and they say, oh, another terrible day, had a really difficult conversation. Nobody really saw what I was doing or cared about what I was doing. It's just actually, let's actually make work be a force for good in people's lives. And then what that delivers is benefits for them, and it also delivers amazing benefits for the organization.
Angela Rickson, it's been great chatting to you. Thank you so much for sharing your insights, your experience, and your wisdom. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Alan. It's been a pleasure and a delight to be here.